a Motorsport Podcast Network production.
Hello and welcome to the Castrol Motorsport News Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Van Leeuwen, and here's what's making news this week. As we talked about last week, Premier Racing has parted ways with driver Gary Jacobson. The first-year team is, at the time of recording, yet to confirm who will drive the 76 entry in Townsville next week. Zane Goddard was the early favourite to replace Jacobson, but he has since recommitted to Tickford Racing in his Bathurst co-driver role. Speaking of that, Tickford has confirmed its driver pairings for the Bathurst 1000. James Moffat will continue with Cam Waters. Goddard will join James Courtney. Kirk Ostecki will partner brother Jake. And Zach Best will join Thomas Randall. The Adelaide 500 is officially back. The South Aussie government has signed a five-year deal with Supercars for the race, which starts this year. As part of the deal, the Adelaide 500 will be the final round for those 5 years. Triple Eight and Dick Johnson Racing are testing at Queensland Raceway today, that's on Tuesday. DJR Enduro driver Tony D'Alberto was meant to be taking part but was ruled out by COVID-19 protocols. Tony flew up for a test late last month, which was rained out, so he's missed out on laps twice now. Porsche has unveiled its new LMDH prototype, the 963, which will be run by Porsche Penske Motorsport in the World Endurance Championship and the IMSA Series in the US. Aussie Matt Campbell will be part of the driver lineup alongside Andre Lotterer, Kevin Estra, Michael Christensen, Lawrence Vantor, Matthew Jaminet, Philippe Nasser and Dane Cameron. There's a new Formula Ford coming to Australia. Motorsport Australia has announced a new multi-make formula with beefed up safety measures such as a halo, which will debut in the National Championship in 2024. The existing Formula Fords will be eligible at national level until at least 2027. And legendary co-driver Coral Taylor made a successful comeback to the Australian Rally Championship in Tasmania on the weekend alongside Harry Bates. They dominated Rally Launceston in their AP4 spec Toyota Yaris. Joining me this week to discuss all that and more is a teammate that I'd kick through a front windscreen for, Stefan Bartholomew. Stefan, how are you this week?
G'day, Andrew. I'm sure glad that you didn't have to kick out a windscreen for me on the weekend. For those who haven't seen it, there was some scary footage getting about of a Ford on its side at the Safari Rally with officials not helping its occupants get out. So looking forward
to... Well, I mean, to be fair, they're the ones responsible for the scary footage. They were filming.
Yes, that was extraordinary. So looking forward to hearing more about that in your chat with WRC reporter Tommy Howard later on.
Yep, absolutely. We will crack into that in a bit more detail. Well, it was all unfolding basically literally as we were recording last week, and now it's official. Gary Jacobson is no longer a Premier Racing driver. The team confirmed that it had parted ways with Jacobson following a pretty tough outing in Darwin. Stefan, I think there are some details on this that we may never be totally clear on, but in hindsight, his kind of erratic efforts in Darwin, they look like the work of a driver under pressure, right?
Yeah, it seemed quite uncharacteristic at the time, the amount of incidents he was involved in over that Darwin weekend, and it was followed by some stunningly honest press quotes from Gary on the Sunday night, where he talked about trying to be more aggressive and having overstepped the line in those efforts. It read more like a confessional than your usual PR type quotes. So there's been no public comment from Gary since, or from the team outside that short statement that it gave out to announce the news. So it was a surprise the way all that came out. And the four-line statement was just so abrupt from the team. Like, I had people asking me whether there was a major indiscretion involved here. But if you actually wind it back a bit, like the jungle drums had been beating on it for a little while. The team's obviously pretty ambitious, and there was some growing discontent there about the performance. So we talked about a couple of weeks ago on the pod, like Zane Goddard doing that test on May 30, which really put the drivers on notice. And there was a little bit of talk in the background there before Darwin that a change could happen. So in that sort of context, it wasn't a total surprise, but the fact that it happened so immediately after the racing action in Darwin suggests there was some frustration there, and the pressure valve had to be released.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's interesting that, you know, you talk about the jungle drums were beating. I mean, there was talk about potentially some pressure around Chris Pither's place in the lineup there as well, not that long ago. So I think, you know, it does underline the ambitions of the team. We know that Zane Goddard, you know, was plan A to take over the seat. Kurt Kostecki was in the mix as well, but both of those drivers have reaffirmed their commitment to Tickford Racing for the Bathurst 1000. James Golding is now being touted as the front runner for the seat. I mean, there's plenty of talent on the sidelines around the place, but if you go chasing a Fabian Coulthard or a Michael Caruso, for example, you're going to need to fork out cash for those guys. You would expect the previous arrangement that they had included some budget supplement. What's the short-term game plan for Premier now, do you think, Stefan? Is there an option that won't require financial outlay that is going to be a big step up from Gary, do you think?
Yeah, it's a bold call from the team to pull the trigger on this without a replacement lined up, especially with where that seat is. I mean, it's no secret that Gary brought funding to that deal. The Subway sponsorship, I believe, is actually tied into Chris Pither's Coke deal. So that you would expect that to stay on. But if you look at the landscape, like it's tough to go to the market at this point of the year when all your go-tos have co-drives. So from the sounds of it, James Golding is in seat 1A at the moment. He's clearly the favourite for this drive, even though he does have a Team 18 co-drive signed at the moment to join Scotty Pye. So there's a bit to work through there, but you can see why someone in James's position would jump at the chance. He's been itching to get back in since his full-time stint ended.
Yeah, I think this all comes back to the bigger picture for Premier and how they might get involved in the driver market for next season. As you pointed out recently when we were talking through potential movements for 2023, you know, the chatter about Will Davison being replaced at Dick Johnson Racing isn't going away despite Davo's excellent form. I mean, he could be on the market next season and a pretty good option to help build that team. In the Tickford co-driver announcement, you know, Zane Goddard did reference a full-time option for the remainder of the year when talking about committing to Tickford. What's your take on that call to go with one race instead of half a season with Premier?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. You would think he would have had to have been pretty tempted by the Premier seat, but without knowing exactly what he was offered and all the details around it, it's sort of hard to know why exactly it's ended up the way it has. I mean, it'd be naive to think there's not a funding requirement for this Premier drive.
And for sure. Yep.
Either way, Zane would be trying to position himself the best he can for 2023. But I guess, like, parking some of the detail, like, it's just a fascinating discussion at this point of a season, whether you would give up a co-drive for a half season in a team that's running at the back. So it's, and it's very much circumstance dependent, isn't it? If you are a Fabian Coulthard and you can go and win Bathurst with Chaz Mostert, you'd stay, you'd reckon, in the deal that you've got. But if you're a Golding who's young and eager for that opportunity, and, you know, last year at Team 18, like, his car only did 6 laps in the race at Bathurst, and it's the only enduro there is. So in Supercars terms, that was a completely wasted year for his career. So, it's an interesting discussion, and we just don't have this very often with a mid-season change like this.
No, exactly. And, you know, you mentioned the funding that has to come with it. If you look at the way that car's been liveried up this year, it seems that it's not necessarily funding with a heap of signage space on the car either. It's a case of, you know, there's some cash that needs to go into this, and this is how the car's going to run because of the agreement with Subway. So, yep, it is very interesting, and I guess we'll see how it's going to play out very soon, because we're going to be on track in, you know, just over a week in Townsville, and someone's got to be sitting in that car. And as you say, I'm pretty sure it's going to be James Golding. Well, there's a new Formula Ford coming to Australia, Stefan. This is something Motorsport Australia and its Formula Ford Technical Working Group has been working on for about a year now. The initial idea was a one-make series, which sounded a lot like the Formula Australia plan that Roland Dane had been working on. It was also quite similar to Formula 4, which, as we know, bombed pretty hard. But thankfully, the one-make plan is dead, and instead multiple manufacturers will be able to build these new cars They will still be a space frame, which is a tubular metal frame, but we'll have a halo and beefed up safety measures like crash structures and wheel tethers. The idea is the cars will be around a second a lap faster and cost about 110 grand, which is, you know, fairly similar to a current car. The current cars will be eligible until at least 2027, and there is no date limit on the existing cars in state series competition or the new cars filtering down to state series competition yet. The New Look National Championship will be eligible for super license points, which comes as part of this sort of overall thawing of relations between Motorsport Australia and Formula Ford after a few years of friction due to the whole Formula 4 thing. Stefan, what are your thoughts on Formula Ford Mark II?
Well, Andrew, you're far deeper into the Formula Ford world than I am, so I'm really looking forward to what you've got to say about all this. But yeah, on face value, there's a fair bit to like with the way they've rolled this out so far. Obviously, change on this scale is riddled with potential issues, but the actual process is very important. You've got to consult with the right people and work through it together. And clearly, Motorsport Australia massively failed on that when they rolled out F4. Any concern in that process appeared to be really dismissed as a vested interest. So here they've at least had a working group with an array of people involved, including people directly involved in Formula Ford at the moment. So when you look at some of the detail they've put out, you know, the safety elements were clearly very important for Motorsport Australia, for Formula Ford to properly be the junior development formula with a national championship and all of that. It had to have a halo on it and all those other safety elements that they've announced. So, yeah, the class where parents put their kids straight out of carts has to be best practice on safety. There's not too much argument about that, I don't think. So they've done that. They've kept it space frame to control the cost. They've kept it multi-make, which really retains that DNA of the category. And they've got that sort of roadmap planned out going forward that people can prepare for. But with all that said, the changeover does look quite tricky there with, you know, the ability to go between state and national has always been important with these Formula Ford cars. So what's what's your read? What's the vibe in the sort of Formula Ford world of how this is going to roll out?
Look, fundamentally, I applaud Formula Ford being welcomed back into the Motorsport Australia fold properly. The category never really went anywhere despite the very, very best efforts of the governing body, which shows just how good it is as a development category. In fact, a lot of the things that kind of, you know, a lot of being sort of pushed back to running at state series rounds and stuff to form a national series, it just drove costs down so much and actually had a really positive effect on the grid size and all that sort of stuff. So I think it's sort of proven over the years, that those years in the being sort of forced out into the wilderness, that, you know, cost containment is so important at that level of motorsport because, you know, Motorsport Australia stripped everything they could out of it and tried to make it as unappealing as possible, and it kept going because it was still the cheapest way to go racing at that level, and at a level that was still recognised by people in the know that understood the benefit that it had on driver development. So, but look, it is going to be good to be you know, back in the Motorsport Australia fold in a positive way. I have some questions about it. Firstly, who's going to make these new cars? I mean, saying it's going to be multi-make is fine as long as we have manufacturers making the car. Mike Borland's been involved in the working group from Spectrum, so I assume that there must be some level of interest shown or commitment there that, you know, that they will build these new cars. So we need, you know, there obviously has to be a market there for people to build them and people to buy them and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, a bit of a question mark over that. Secondly, remember, we're still asking competitors to spend more than 100 grand on a new car when many have what they probably feel like is a perfectly good car sitting there already that they already own or they already lease or whatever. So, you know, you've still got the tricky sales job of going out to competitors and saying, right, you need to spend what is still a heck of a lot of money. It might not be in motor racing terms, but it's still going to be more than 100 grand. And we traditionally see these things tend to overblow in terms of cost rather than come in cheaper. And a second point to that, to basically having people need to go out and get new cars, I mean, motorsport is facing the challenge of sustainability in a changing world. And it's a space that motorsport Australia is generally very proactive in terms of sustainability, being conscious of the environment, all these things that are important factors in the modern world. You know, we can't use Avgas in Kent-powered Formula Fords now because it has lead in it and that seemed to be bad for the environment, which is fine. But if you, you know, you have to imagine that the final objective of this new Formula Ford is that it eventually takes over from our old Formula Ford at all levels. And we'll effectively be rendering hundreds and hundreds of racing cars around the country obsolete over a period of time, which in my mind is the complete opposite of sustainability because there's a footprint to building new cars and there's a footprint to having old cars sitting around doing nothing. The safety changes are good. Your point on that is 100% right. Could we have done it with bolt-on parts on the existing cars? You know, like you could put a halo on the existing car and all that sort of stuff. I don't know, maybe. We're not reacting to a spate of injuries in these cars. You know, there hasn't been any serious injuries in a long time. They aren't overly dangerous cars. So whether some of the desired safety outcomes could have been achieved, given the fact we're not going to a monocoque, could have been achieved with bolt-on parts, I don't know. I think that would have been something that was looked at and obviously decided against. And then you start to think, well, why is that? And, you know, if I really put my really cynical hat on for a second, maybe Motorsport Australia just wasn't necessarily in a position to let Formula Ford back into the building as it is or very close to as it is because we were told it was no good and had to be replaced by Formula Ford all those years ago. And it would be the ultimate admission that that wasn't the case at all if they just said, okay, well, look, this thing's still going and it's still it's what we need as part of our ladder, so let's just bring it straight back in as it is. So, you know, is ensuring there are some significant changes to the category, is there an element of face saving there? It's definitely plausible. But in saying all that, your point about the fact that the consultation has been much better is 100% right. The Formula Ford Association is on board with this change and it's good that they've been involved in the process because they can have a say and ensure that it's not just, you know, a detached governing body saying, well, this is how this is going to be now because that's what it was last time. So it definitely, you know, it's not perfect, but it could have been a lot worse. You know, there's certainly other iterations of the plan were nowhere near as positive as this one. So yeah, that's kind of where I sit on it.
It's interesting to look at it in the context of the global junior open wheel sphere as well. Obviously the beauty of Formula Ford back in the day was they used to run it everywhere and it was so strong in the UK. Do you think with this rule set, there is potential to then export it into other markets?
Potentially, but the thing is we've got to remember that we're just a different place. We're a different motor racing environment. Like that was always an advantage. You could do Formula Ford in Australia and then you could go to the Formula Ford Festival and then you could race British Formula Ford or whatever and you were sort of on the stepping stone to British F3 and all that sort of stuff now. But you've seen your Formula Fours and your Formula Regionals and all that stuff do great business in Europe and it just didn't work here because it's just different over here, you know, and we're trying to teach drivers to drive different cars. I don't know that the relevance to overseas categories is necessarily super important. I don't think we have to worry about whether this thing can be exported elsewhere because as long as we have a strong Formula Ford here, you're learning what you need to learn to go and jump in a Formula Renault car, or you're learning what you need to learn to drive a supercar. We're sticking with you know sequential shift, with a mechanical gear shift and a clutch and all that stuff. You're learning those skills in Formula Ford. So I think that it's probably not something that's going to spread around the world because I think in Europe they've got their pathway reasonably well set up at the moment. It's here where the pathway has been broken because Formula Ford didn't work. The model that worked in Europe didn't work. And that's why we're taking this unique approach because we have a unique kind of motor racing landscape here.
And the reality of the now compared to decades gone by is that these young kids that want to try to get to F1, they don't really spend some of them any time racing cars here
exactly.
Before going to Europe.
Exactly. No, that's exactly right. But with something like Formula Ford, and you know, a lot of the positive elements will be retained. You know, H pattern gearboxes. You know, you got to learn. That's where you learn to heel and toe. So you've picked up a skill that you might use. You know, if you go to Europe, you might not use. You go to Europe, it's not going to hurt to have that skill. But if you want to be a supercars driver, you got to learn to heel and toe. that's how you get the best out of a supercar. You know, everyone says that the magic happens in the braking area. That's where the really quick guys go really quick. You learn those skills in Formula Ford. And if you just jump into something with paddles and two pedals, you're not learning that.
Yep. Well, it'll be interesting to see how it rolls out from here. So 2024 is when it is meant to debut, and we will see how it integrates into what we've got at the moment.
It will definitely be fascinating. Well, let's move on to a former Formula Ford, Australian Formula Ford driver, Matty Campbell, and his sensational call-up to Porsche's LMDH program. This is the final step in the Porsche pyramid for the Queenslander, and it's really great news for Aussie motorsport. And I think he's really, you know, he's shown how that Porsche pathway can work for you if you've got the talent and you make the most of your opportunities. Matt addressed some Aussie media this morning, and here's what he had to say about this exciting news.
Really, really excited. I mean, nice to finally get it off the chest because I've known for quite a long time now. So now that it's finally announced, it's a big relief because obviously so much has been going on in the background. But yeah, big things coming up, obviously, with next year and the future. You know, a big step for me moving into prototypes now and into LMDH with Porsche Penske Motorsport. So yeah, big step, but looking forward to it and really enjoyed the time so far. So yeah, a lot of things to come. Definitely been in the car and been testing. I mean, it's still pretty raw and everything like that. Still a lot of work to do, but yeah, been in the car a couple of times now. I still need a lot more miles, that's for sure, but feeling comfortable already. And now the testing will start to switch over to US as well. So, yeah, we've sort of only got a couple more tests to go in Europe before the majority of testing now moves over to US. So, yeah, much more miles to come in the car, which is really important. You know, obviously for us, there's a lot of us drivers that don't have much prototype experience, so the next 6 months will be really critical for the finalising car development and also just getting comfortable in the car and getting used to all the systems and that sort of thing. Yeah, it's quite surreal. I think it really hit me when we went live with the announcement because I've known for about a year or so that, you know, I'll be involved in the program. And, yeah, it's surreal, you know, sort of reaching the pinnacle of the Porsche Motorsport pyramid, you know, reaching the top, which was always our goal. And, you know, sort of the last box to tick, you know, with myself and my supporters and my company, MCR. I mean, you know, we've been fortunate enough to tick every box along the way, you know, winning Pro Cup Australia number one, winning the Porsche Junior Program Shootout, moving over, doing Super Cup, moving on from that, you know, professional program, Porsche Factory Driver and now this. You know, it's real. It's what I always looked up and aimed to do from the moment I joined Porsche, obviously, at the time, but I was still an LEP1. And then that all sort of ended and now this. So, you know, surreal to be able to finally be in this position and get a full-time factory gig in a factory car. So very exciting. And, yeah, nice, I suppose, progression. And it really pays off, you know, for everyone that's been involved in my journey. So very, very special for all those involved.
All right, let's take a look at what's been happening around the world. Francesco Bagnaia won the Dutch TT at Assen ahead of Marco Bezzecchi and Maverick Vinales. Championship leader Fabio Quartararo crashed twice in the race. Jack Miller finished sixth after being passed by Aleix Espargaró at the last corner, and Remy Gardner finished 19th. Chase Elliott won a twice weather-delayed NASCAR Cup Series race at the Nashville Super Speedway ahead of Kurt Busch, while Wayne Taylor Racing pair Philippe Albuquerque and Ricky Taylor won the 6 hours of the Glen IMSA race. Robert Wickens took his first race win since his horror IndyCar crash in 2018. He and Mark Wilkins shared a Hyundai Elantra to victory in the TCR class of the Michelin Pilot Challenge race at Watkins Glen. Yuri Vips has been suspended by Red Bull after being heard using racist language during a video game live stream. The Estonian is part of the Red Bull Junior team and has been competing in F2 with a high-tech Grand Prix. And Calle Rovanpera dominated the Safari Rally in Kenya in what was a 1-2-3-4-4 Toyota. To tell us more about that, I grabbed the Motorsport Network's WRC editor Tom Howard for a chat from on the ground in Kenya.
Tommy, firstly, tell me about your safari experience. That's an event that I would love to see in the flesh one day. How's it been to actually be on the ground?
Yeah, I've got to say, it's an amazing event. It really is quite something special. Certainly from a career point of view, it's right up there in things I've ever done. It really is just so completely different, and you do feel like you are going on a proper adventure. Like, it's just, yeah, you're in unfamiliar surroundings, but it's what I like about it the most is the fact that it's such a big deal over here. Like, this is their biggest sporting event in the country, so everyone is just super rally mad over here. Like, that you walk and talk to the local Kenyans and they know the ins and outs of everything. Like, it's ridiculous. So yeah, they're so passionate about it and so friendly. Just a lovely, lovely place to visit. And what an event. It's just so tough, a real proper test of any driver and machine. I think we've only got a few of these left sort of in motorsport, and this is right up there as one of them.
Well, Kalle Rovanperä made it look pretty easy there, mate. He was just too good on the weekend, and a 30-year first for Toyota with a 1-2-3-4. They must have been pretty happy chappies there at Toyota.
Yeah, Kalle Rovanperä is, I don't know what it's going to take to stop this guy. Like, it's ridiculous. Yeah, I don't think he's had a puncture all year, which is saying something, because I think, yeah, everyone's had countless. But yeah, he's just unstoppable. The guy just can't, he's just so cool and calm and collected behind the wheel. It's quite worrying. And a lot of people are just a bit scared just how dominant he's going to be, because no one really can touch him at the moment. He's just super supreme. I mean, the only blemish he had was on Thursday in the opening super special in Nairobi, which was pretty special, right? You know, in the middle of a sort of the grounds of their national stadium, they created a super special 2x2 Perth style, shall we say, super special in the backdrop of the city and the national park, which is quite spectacular. But anyway, going back to what happened, yeah, Kalle was doing that stage and almost rolled his Yaris and picked up a puncture. But that's the only problem he had the entire weekend. He did get a little bit ill on Saturday, and I think most of us all got ill at some point. But somehow he just has this ability to pull through. And the key to the victory really was on Saturday when the rain came down. He just simply was better than anybody when it got really muddy and slippery, like proper old safari spec. Jari Matti Latvala, his team boss, actually credited that by Kalle Rovanperä's extracurricular activities and doing some drifting events. Kalle's been doing a few drifting events for fun, just because he loves driving anything he can. And he feels like the skills that he's been learning there actually gave him the edge in the wet, which was quite an interesting thought. I actually put that to Kalle, and he kind of laughed it off, but he did actually sort of say, "Well, yeah, I've been doing quite a lot of that, so maybe it did help." But once he got ahead on Saturday, he sort of extended his lead on Saturday night to almost a minute over Elfyn Evans, his teammate. And Sunday was, I guess, a relatively easy drive. But I say that nothing is easy here in Safari. If you can get yourself to the finish, you can count yourself very, very lucky, because there's so many things that can stop you here. And there were six stages on Sunday, which is more than your usual Sunday. So 80 kilometers, in fact. So anything could happen still. So he did back off, and it was very much preservation mode. But again, he labeled it his hardest ever victory. And I can understand that. He had to battle through illness and then anything that Safari threw at him, which is a lot of things, whether it's deep sand, ridiculously rough, rocky gravel stages, the weather, the wildlife, there's a lot to reckon with. But so you've got to really take your hat off to him, because this is a remarkable win.
Absolute disaster for Hyundai and M Sport. Did I see M Sport putting the drivers to work at one point? I definitely saw Gus Greensmith kicking in the windscreen on his car at one point. What was going on there?
Yeah, we'll start with M Sport. Yeah, it was an absolute, it was a disaster for Hyundai and M Sport. They both really, really struggled. A lot of it down to reliability. And this is the place where it's going to highlight those weaknesses the most, because this place really is tough. Like the organizers made the rally tougher this year than last year because they wanted it to be a bit more like the old Safari, which was a real, as you know, a real marathon brutal event. And yeah, you could tick that box. They did that pretty well. When you've got deep sand like that, realistically, you want a Dakar car to go through that rather than a rally car. It's that tough. But going back to Emsport, yes. They've had a lot. Let's put it this way. The damage bill at Emsport this year has been pretty high. There's been a lot of incidents, and the mechanics have had probably the most work to do out of anyone in the service park. And I think after the latest sort of retirements here, so all four works cars retired at some point during the rally here this weekend due to either crashes or mechanical issues or whatever. So when Gus Greensmith had a puncture on Friday, really he should have stopped to fix that straight away, but kept going and ripped the back of his car off, which is not a ideal situation. And basically that ruined his rally because it cost him 13 minutes to change a wheel instead of two. So obviously the team weren't too happy about that. And then when he rolled again on Saturday after rejoining the rally, it was a slow roll, but again, you know, avoidable. You can imagine the mechanics weren't too pleased to have to rebuild that again. And Sport boss Malcolm Wilson said, if you want to return on Sunday, you go and repair that car, help the guys out. So they, him and Adrian Formeau, the other driver who had some difficulties, shall we say, the first probably for Formeau was self-inflicted, the other perhaps not. They both donned the M Sport overalls and got to work. And they fixed the cars with the crew, which was an interesting scenario to see. But just going back to that Greensmith role, that was quite a nasty, a potentially nasty incident because there were marshals there, but they refused to help him and Jonas Andersen get out of the car. He'd rolled onto its side and they couldn't get out. They were trapped in the car for 3 minutes. And in Croatia, when Oliver Solberg had a similar accident, the exhaust actually set fire to the car. So they were very worried that the car was going to go up in flames. So Gus, being sort of concerned, just thought, well, how am I going to get out? So he just kicked the windscreen out and they climbed through the front of the car and were not best pleased, let's say, with the marshals. They then righted the car, got back in and drove it for another stage or so. So without a windscreen, they donned some goggles. It was quite a spectacular sight. They got to the end, but unfortunately, some cooling issues, believe it or not, for the engine made them stop off the end of stage nine.
Crazy stuff. Looks like there was a really good news story in WRC with the first female round winner in that category.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very good news story there. Maxime Wahome is a 26-year-old Kenyan girl. She only took up rallying at this event last year. So she's only been doing it a year. And this was her first outing in the new Rally 3 M Sport Ford Fiesta car. She only went and won the WRC 3 category. Dominated it, in fact, was an impressive, really impressive performance. So she's the first woman to win a WRC 3 category round. She's also the first woman to win a WRC support series since 1994. So quite an impressive achievement for her. And I actually spoke to her on Thursday before the event, and she said that Molly Taylor was her idol growing up, and would love to meet her one day and hopefully gets the opportunity. But it does look like now that she may well be off to Europe to do some more rounds following this success.
That is absolutely fantastic stuff. Well, Tommy, I'm very jealous of your Kenyan adventures. It sounds like it's even more fun than trudging around Coffs Harbour looking at rally cars. So good job there. Thanks for taking some time to join us on the pod, and we'll check back in with you later in the season.
Cool. Thanks, mate.
And we thank Tommy for his time. You can read all his wonderful work at autosport.com and motorsport.com. Okay, Castrol mailbag time, Stefan. Brian Freer asked, with Sandown on its way out, could there be an opportunity for two New Zealand rounds? Well, A New Zealand doubleheader is the discussion point that's been around forever and ever and ever, and it makes sense in so many ways. Kiwis love motorsport. There are plenty of great circuits over there. You could have one race on the North Island and one on the South Island, and given how, you know, if we look at the fact that travel costs almost sunk the event for this year, spreading those costs out over two events makes just a lot of sense as well. So why has it never happened? Well, Auckland pays for supercars to come to New Zealand, and they want supercars to be racing in Auckland and not anywhere else. It's the whole arrangement would have to basically be rewritten because of the funding that comes out of Auckland Unlimited to get the category over the ditch. Stefan, what are your thoughts on a Kiwi doubleheader?
Yeah, I mean, I think you mentioned that there's a lot of cool circuits over there, but when you then try to sift out the ones with the infrastructure and everything around them that you need to run a big show like supercars, it does certainly rule a few of them out. So, yeah. I mean, it's easy to forget that, in 2020, supercars were going to go to Hampton Downs. It was an unusual situation there with the Anzac Day issue they had, which meant they couldn't actually race at Pukekohe. But that idea is theoretically cool, actually, to do Pukekohe on one weekend and Hampton Downs on another, which is the sort of thing that, like, pre-COVID, you just never think about running in the same sort of market twice, but they did all those doubleheader events at the same tracks. So, something like that would be cool, but, again, you're dipping into the same market and the same funding person and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, it's a discussion that always comes up, but it's still hard to see it happening. I reckon if there's a spare slot on the calendar, then Queensland Raceway would have to be the clubhouse leader to pick that up.
Yeah, that's very true. And the funny little thing, I mean, Pukekohe and Hampton Downs are so close to each other, but they're actually in separate, you know, they're not called states. What are they? They're called like government.
Yeah,
territory areas. I can't remember the exact term, but they're actually, you know, so Pukekohe is in Auckland. And Hampton Downs isn't. So it's not even a necessarily conversation of saying to Auckland Unlimited, hey, can we just up the funding or can we run two rounds, you know, because one of them technically, even though they're only like half an hour away from each other, isn't actually in Auckland. But anyway, I think it's time to hand out some Castrol Stars of the Week. Stefan, who you got this week, mate?
My Castrol Star of the Week is three-time 500cc motorcycle world champion Wayne Rainey. He rode his 92 title-winning Yamaha at the Goodwood Festival of Speed. It was the first time for him on a GP bike since he was paralysed in a crash in 93. So Goodwood is an incredible event every year, but this was a really special part of it in 2022.
Absolutely. That is a fantastic Castrol Star of the Week. Good choice, Stefan. I'm going to stick with the Goodwood theme and give my star to the rather unusual-looking McMurtry Automotive Spearling. I hope I've said that right. I'm pretty sure I haven't. This little car is powered by an electric motor and can generate 2,000 kilograms of downforce from a fan. It's now the fastest car to ever go up the Goodwood Hill climb with Max Chilton at the wheel. He stopped the clocks at 39.08 seconds, and the video is absolutely wild. It is well worth a watch if you haven't already seen it. Well, that's it for this week. Remember to like, subscribe, and review our work wherever you listen to your podcast, and we'll be back next week with more Castrol Motorsport News.